Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft, and today we will be learning Melachim Aleph Perek Yud Zayin. In Pasuk Aleph, Eliyahu HaNavi, who is described as Eliyahu HaTishbi, since he's from Toshavei Gilad, pronounced a decree in the name of Hashem to Ahav that there would be no rain or dew until he says otherwise. There's a machloket regarding whether Eliyahu made up this decree himself or whether Hashem had told him to say it. The Radak and the Abarbanel believe that Eliyahu made up the decree himself because he decided that Hashem was failing to live up to his own Torah. The Ralbag and Rav Yosef ibn Kaspi believe that Hashem is the one who decreed it, and then Eliyahu said it as Hashem's messenger. For the purpose of our analysis of this parak, we're going to assume, like the Abarbanel and Radak, that Eliyahu made up the decree himself. After the decree, Eliyahu went into hiding. And the reason for this was twofold. On a practical level, he needed to hide from Ahav because Ahav wanted to find Eliyahu in order to compel him to bring rain, and Eliyahu wanted to avoid this. But on a symbolic level, perhaps Eliyahu's desire to hide was in order to reflect Hashem's hiding from Bnei Yisrael during this time. While Eliyahu was in hiding, he experienced three miraculous events that were each connected in some way to the famine he had just decreed. In Psukim Bet through Zion, we're told that Hashem actually told Eliyahu to travel eastward and hide in Nachal Krit, which was a stream that flowed from the Yarden. Hashem told him to drink from the water of the stream, and he would be submerged in this water in which he was drinking, and that ravens would bring him the food he would need to live. Eliyahu lived submerged in Nachal Krit for a year, during which he drank its water and was fed bread and meat by ravens each morning and evening. By the end of the year, the stream dried up since there was no water left in the land. In Psukim Chet through Tet Zayin, we're told that Hashem appeared to Eliyahu a second time and told him to travel north this time to a city named Tsarfat, which was in Sidon. Sidon, remember, was the country where Izebel came from, just to the north of Eretz Israel, whose people worshipped the Baal. Hashem told Eliyahu that he should settle there, and that Hashem himself has commanded a widow there to support him. Eliyahu did as he was told, and when he arrived at the entrance to the city of Tsarfat, he encountered a widow gathering wood. He called out to her and asked her to get him some water to drink. And as the widow started to walk to get him the water, Eliyahu called out again and asked her for some bread as well. To this request, the widow responded that all she had left in her home was a spoonful of flour and a very small amount of oil, and that she had been gathering wood so that she could bake the little flour and oil she had for herself and her son as their last meal before their impending deaths. Eliyahu then told the widow not to fear, but rather to do as she had planned, and to bake him a small cake first and give it to him to eat, and then bake a small cake for herself and her son afterwards. For Hashem has said that your flour and oil will not run out until it rains again. The Ralbag explains that the reason why Eliyahu demanded that the widow feed him before she feed herself and her son was that she had to first share her food with Eliyahu in order to trigger the great miracle of the unceasing flour and oil in her household. The water then did as Eliyahu had asked, and she and her household ate for many days, as neither her flour nor oil ran out as Hashem had promised to her through Eliyahu. And finally, in Psukim Yud Zayin through Chaf Dalet, presumably after a year has passed, the widow's son became extremely ill, and he died. The widow then challenged Eliyahu and asked him why he even came to her house in the first place. She said to him, "Did you come to remind me of my sins and kill my son?" Eliyahu told her to give him her son, which she did. And then Eliyahu took him upstairs to the attic of the house where Eliyahu had slept for the past year, and he laid the boy down on his bed. Eliyahu then called out to Hashem, asking him why he chose to kill the widow's son, and requesting that he return his soul, that Hashem return the boy's soul to his body and revive him. Hashem listened to Eliyahu and returned the boy's soul, thereby reviving him. Eliyahu then took the boy and returned him downstairs to his mother. The widow responded, "Now I know that you're an Ish Elokim, that you're a man of God, and that the words of Hashem in your mouth are true." Each of these three experiences lasted a year. And there are actually many similarities between all of the experiences, including the deliverance of Dvar Hashem in each story, signs of famine that Eliyahu had just decreed in each story, miraculous salvations in each story, etc. But beyond these similarities, each experience, as we go from one to the next, was a little bit more intense than the first, in several different ways. Firstly, the location of each experience gets more intense from one to the next, because first, in the first story, Eliyahu was in Nachal Crit, which, as we discussed, was to the east of Eretz Yisrael, presumably beyond the border of Eretz Yisrael, so that Eliyahu could successfully hide from Ahav, who had been looking for him this entire time unsuccessfully, as we'll see in the next parak. Ahav's servant tells this to Eliyahu. But even though Nachal Crit must have been outside of Eretz Yisrael, it was connected to the Yarden, so it couldn't have been too far beyond Eretz Yisrael's border. Whereas the next city that Eliyahu travels to in Tzarfat, which was in Sidon, it was not just beyond Eretz Yisrael's borders like Nachal Crit was, but it was much further away. And furthermore, it was located in the heartland of Baal territory. The fact that Eliyahu could produce food miraculously and create life miraculously in the very land where Baal was completely helpless during the drought served to further prove Hashem's superiority over the Baal. The second area in which we see each experience grow in intensity is by analyzing the primary characters that appear in each experience. Right? In the first story, Eliyahu lived by himself in the Nachal with no one else to interact with. In the second story, we see Eliyahu interacting actively with the Almana. And in the third story, Eliyahu interacts with both the Almana and her son. So we start out with Eliyahu by himself, and then we have him primarily interacting with one person, and then we have him primarily interacting with two people. And finally, and this is probably the most important, with each story, we see the intensity of the famine increase as well. In the first story, there was water in Nachal Crit at the beginning because the drought had just begun. After a year, there was no water left due to the lack of rain. And so we see that in the first story, Eliyahu encounters a lack of water, but it takes a while to get to that point. In the second story, we know that the widow, the Almana, had so little food that she was about to serve herself and her son what she believed would be their last meal and expected that they would both die afterwards. And so we see that in this story, Eliyahu encountered a lack of food. And finally, in the third story, the Almana's son falls ill and died from that illness, demonstrating the diseases and epidemics that usually accompany famines. And in this third story, we see that Eliyahu encountered not only a lack of water or food, but a lack of health, a lack of life. What was the message of all this? Why did Hashem have Eliyahu go to these particular places and experience these particular miracles? Many Mefarshim view these experiences as Hashem's messages to Eliyahu. Eliyahu, you should not have withheld the rain. Please have compassion, have rachamim, have mercy on Bnei Yisrael, bring the rain back. And they see these messages come to the fore with different symbols in each story. The Balbim explains that the ravens in the first story who fed Eliyahu are known as cruel birds. And yet it was the cruel birds who sustained Eliyahu in Nachal Crit to teach him that he has been too cruel to the nation by killing them through famine. Rabbi Jachter suggests that just as ravens who are unkosher and cruel were a source of positivity for Eliyahu because they gave him food while he was hiding in Nachal Crit, so too Ahav, who has not been acting in a kosher manner, can bring about positivity if properly engaged. Rashi explains that the water of Nachal Crit dried up by the end of the year so that Eliyahu would better and more personally understand the need for rain. Remember, he had survived that year by drinking the very water in the Nachal, and now there was none left to drink, right? Because Hashem was so upset that so many people were dying. The Alshich suggests that the reason why Hashem sent Eliyahu to the Almana and her son who were suffering and about to die was so that Eliyahu could see firsthand the kind of suffering that he had brought upon the people. And again, in the last scene, not only did Eliyahu experience hunger, lack of food, lack of water, but there was real death happening. So through all these symbols, throughout all these experiences, it seems that Hashem was trying to send Eliyahu the message that enough is enough. He's been cruel. He's withheld too much from the people, and he should stop the drought and bring the rain. However, unfortunately, Eliyahu did not heed Hashem's message. He didn't retract his oath for the famine. he did not bring the rain back. Rather, as we'll see in the next parak, he only returned to Ahav when Hashem explicitly commanded him to. And so what we learn in this parak is that Eliyahu was a pretty stubborn, strong-willed man of din, judgment, who could not fathom the reason for Hashem's rachamim, for why Hashem would bring mercy to the people. To clarify this idea, because I think that it really deserves a moment of reflection, din, judgment, is very straightforward. When man does a good deed, he's immediately rewarded for it. And when man sins, he's immediately punished for it. Very clear, very direct. Everything that you do has a consequence. The consequence is even known in advance, basically. Chazal teach us, actually, that Hashem had originally created the world with din. As the Pasuk in Bereshit Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph says, Bereshit bara Elokim. In the beginning, Elokim created. The world was created specifically by Elokim, which Chazal tell us is the name of Hashem that refers to his Midat HaDin, his attribute of justice. Because it's very straightforward and clear and logical, and it made sense to create the world in this way. However, according to Chazal, once Hashem created man on the sixth day, he realized that man needed rachamim, mercy, in order to temper Hashem's din, judgment, because man couldn't survive without rachamim. Mankind would have been destroyed before 24 hours had even passed. That's why, after Adam was created at the end of Perek Aleph, Hashem is no longer referred to in Perek Bet as merely Elohim, but as Hashem Elohim. As the Shem Havaya Yudke Vavke is the name of Hashem that refers to his Midat HaRachamim, his attribute of mercy, according to Chazal. With the introduction of Rachamim, mankind benefited in that they would be given a second chance, because with Rachamim, sins wouldn't always lead to punishments, as they would with Din. However, the downside of Rachamim was that things weren't as clear and direct, since sins wouldn't immediately lead to punishments and good deeds wouldn't immediately be rewarded. Therefore, sinners wouldn't always learn the evil of their ways due to their not being punished immediately, and good people, unfortunately, wouldn't always learn the goodness of their actions due to their not being rewarded immediately. In fact, the introduction of Rachamim introduced the concepts of Rasha v'Tovlo, that good things happen to bad people, and Tzadik V'Ralo, that bad things happen to good people in this world. Hashem decided long ago that the benefits of Rachamim outweighed its costs. But Eliyahu vehemently disagreed with Hashem on this. Eliyahu felt that by not punishing Bnei Yisrael immediately for their worship of Avodah Zarah, they didn't fully understand the incorrectness of their actions. He felt really strongly that the only way for Bnei Yisrael to learn was through being punished for their wrongdoing. When he saw that Hashem himself wasn't punishing Bnei Yisrael with a lack of rain, as he had promised to do in the Torah, Eliyahu decided to take matters into his own hands and punish them himself. Hashem responded to Eliyahu's decree by fulfilling it, and didn't end the famine himself, either because Hashem always fulfills Tzadikim's decrees, or because he wanted to allow Eliyahu to exercise his free will, or because he felt that stopping the famine himself would undermine Eliyahu's educational mission to Bnei Yisrael, trying to teach them the consequences of their actions, of their misdeeds. But even though Hashem decided to fulfill Eliyahu's decree, he simultaneously tried to teach Eliyahu the incorrectness of his own actions through the symbols present in his own experiences, as we've already discussed. Unfortunately, Eliyahu, in his stubbornness, refused to heed Hashem's lessons, and therefore refused, even after 3 years and much loss of life, to rescind his decree of the famine from upon Malchut Yisrael. Eliyahu was a very strong-willed man of din, and as we will see in the coming prakim, this personality trait will very much affect the rest of his Navi career. Thank you for studying together Le'iloi Nishmat Malka Esther Batzvi Yosef.